From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. I'll update you on both the agricultural news for the afternoon and take a quick look at the agricultural weather forecast, especially those low temperatures, even some of the snowfall that is expected in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt over the weekend. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural energies, what ethanol looks like at this point, how crude oil has been performing since the Saudi Arabian oil fields were under drone attack earlier in the year. And then we'll take up LNG and how it moves through Ukraine into Western Europe from Russia. There are pipelines across that nation, and we'll do that with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, December corn today at $3.95 3/4, 8 3/4 higher. The March at 4.06 1/2, up 7 1/2. And May futures at $4.11 1/4, 6 3/4 cents higher. July 4.14 1/2, up 6 1/4. And December contract of next year at 4.09, up 2 1/2 cents. Soybeans up 5 1/4 in the lead. November at $9.20 1/2. January at 9.35 1/4, up 5 3/4. In the March at 9.47, 6 1/2 higher. The May futures up 6 1/2 at 9.56 3/4. In July at 9.65 1/2, up 6 1/2 cents. Next year's November at 9.67 1/2, 5 cents higher. Bean oil futures down 24 cents, settled at 29.77. The bean meal at 3.02.30. Up $4.90. Wheat futures in the soft red December contract $5.25 1/cent, 11 cents higher. July up 10 1/4 at 5.16 1/2. And the hard red July at 4.44 1/4, up 7 1/4 cents. October live cattle down 7 1/2 at $108.17 1/2. December at 110.85, 35 cents lower. October feeders for 100 pounds up 32 1/2 cents at $142.02 1/2. November there at 141.25, 32 1/2 higher. And lean hogs in the October up $1.20 at $61.70. Crude oil futures at $52.51 a barrel, down 21 cents. Ethanol futures $1.44 1/10, 4 1/2 cents higher. And heating oil just about unchanged at $1.90 even. Gasoline at $1.57 7/10, 8 tenths, or rather 0.08 cents lower, rather higher. And natural gas at $2.28 8/10, that's $0.05 1/10 higher, or rather lower, on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off around 170 points. The U.S. dollar is up 0.16, and the gold futures down 30 cents at $1,497.40. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace. Kind of an interesting trade through the overnight and then into the morning hours. They shifted gears at one point.
Yeah, they sure did, Todd. You know, the overnight, we were looking at the blacklisting of some Chinese companies by the U.S., leaving they're making the comment they might be leaving the talks early and not ready to make any concessions this time. And then we sort of started paying attention to the weather.
And once they did that, they saw what cold temperatures into the northwest and how far into the Corn Belt.
Well, I think, you know, it was the amount of snow that come along with the cold temperatures, I think, along the way. They're talking about the area that could be affected by that. They were just adding up, and there's 2.43 billion bushels of corn produced in that area and 640 million acres of beans. And with the amount of snow along with the cold weather and stopping things, they said there could be as much as 10% damage in that area coming out of the snowstorm and the early freeze up in that area. So that becomes sort of good. And, of course, so far we're seeing very strong corn bases in the area over here. And I know through most of the rest of the Midwest, too, because farmers just aren't selling much.
Yeah, so the important part there is that the futures markets went higher and the basis managed to tag right along with it. That didn't widen out between the cash price and what the futures price was.
No, and that's very unusual, as we well know. Generally, as the board goes up, why the basis widens just a little bit and doesn't necessarily lose penny for penny, but it does generally tend to work that way. So the good things, and it looks like, you know, Then again, we've got this little report on Thursday, I believe, that the government's going to come out and give us our WASDE numbers. That, boy, could they make changes in them this time.
Yeah, so if you look back, I guess today's numbers, or at least the basis following it up, kind of gives you credence on what the grain stock showed you. Fewer stocks around. How USDA will put those into the WASDE numbers will be interesting. Most interesting will be what the ending stocks happen. You end up with for both this year and next year, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, first off, we know that the carry-in, they'll have to adjust with that. But how are we going to do on our exports and usage numbers? That's the big thing. And how will they maybe incorporate some ideas that the crop rating's going down and a few things along the way? And we've got some, but we don't probably have enough to get a really good feel to what they might do with the yields is what's going on so far.
Now, this comes on the heels of yesterday's weekly crop progress report, which didn't show a lot of progress.
No, I mean, basically, that was another positive thing, that we are moving slow. And, you know, we've got a lot of guys, they've got their early beans done, and they're doing some tillage out there right now. And their corn is just a little too wet for what they want to do. I was talking to one guy, and it took him, I think, 4 days to get 8,000 bushels of corn that he put in his dryer dried down. So that doesn't move very fast if it's that wet and drying down that fat, slow.
Mm-hmm. What are farmers telling you about yields?
All over the board. Basically, the beans are doing a little better than what they thought they would down here. We're 43 to 78 on our 35 to 78, I'm sorry, on what we've seen on the beans down here. Most of them falling in the 50 to 60 bushel category and what we're looking that way. Corn, we just haven't seen enough of it combined down in our area to hardly throw things out. But there's been some good yields and there's been some real bad yields so on the corn, but not enough to give you any good indication.
What are your expectations through the end of the week?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I think volatility is the word for that. You know, we went through some chart points here today. The Dease corn, of course, is going to find some problems as we try to either do or don't break through $4 after closing at 395 and three quarters. The beans, to close above 920 is going to be hard to get done here. It's going to be somewhat resistance there for a little while until we see what's going on with China.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website. You can find our daily program and listen to it on demand anytime you would like. The address is willag.org. In today's agricultural news, the Renewable Fuels Association has released a nationwide survey by Morning Consult just ahead of the EPA's Friday announcement of fixes to future biofuel blending waivers to be included in a rulemaking for 2020. The survey shows strong support for renewable fuels by the public and opposition to exempting oil refineries from biofuel blending requirements, says RFA Association Chief Jeff Cooper.
Refinery exemptions aren't just unpopular with farmers and ethanol producers. They're also unpopular with the general public.
Now, Cooper says the Morning Consult poll showed registered voters opposed EPA biofuel blending exemptions to oil refineries by nearly 2-1.
Overall, we saw 55% of respondents opposed to small refinery exemptions compared to just 29% who supported. And if we look just at those respondents that expressed an opinion on these exemptions, two-thirds, 65%, were opposed.
Cooper, meantime, says support for the renewable fuel standard has reached its highest level since his group began polling on the RFS, with 62% of respondents backing the biofuel standard. In the latest poll, that's up 6 percentage points from the 2018 survey. The new survey in late September polled nearly 2,000 registered voters and had a margin of error of plus or minus 2%. Let's stay with biofuels for just a moment, where the Association of Equipment Manufacturers have joined Corn Belt Farm Groups in applauding the Trump administration for reallocating biofuel demand displaced by waivers. President Donald Trump's plan to reallocate biofuels lost to small refinery waivers announced last week will reopen the rulemaking process to account for the volumes waivers displaced. The National Corn Growers Association points out the latest round of waivers increased total waived biofuels demand to 4.04 billion gallons under the Trump administration. In addition to the commitment to redistribute waived gallons, the Trump administration is also proposing to take further steps supported by farmers, including removing other barriers and supporting infrastructure to help grow demand for higher blends of ethanol. And finally, today we'll turn to trade, where House Democrats are wrapping up a two-day trip to Mexico to discuss the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Led by House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal, the visit comes as the Democratic Working Group on NAFTA 2.0 continues to engage in what they call productive discussions with the U.S. Trade Representative regarding important improvements to the agreement. That according to Neal. Representative Neal also leads the Working Group on USMCA. The lawmakers are meeting with representatives from the Mexican government as well as local workers focusing on enforcement of the agreement regarding labor standards in Mexico. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi last weekend maintained, "We are making progress on reaching an agreement to pass the trade bill." And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, you know, it's that time of year when you need to be watching the roadways pretty closely because those great big pieces of farm machinery are out there big time now. The combines and the tractors move slowly, the wagons behind them, the semis are there, and they're all coming in and out of places that you're not used to seeing vehicles. The other thing is that if you're coming up from behind one, or towards one from the front side, either one, be very careful. These are big pieces of machinery, and they may not see you back there. Be patient with them. They'll see you. They do have mirrors and a way to get a look at you back there, but they may not be able to get over just yet or might be watching the road ahead of them, so don't get in a hurry. And remember, they move slow, so slow down as you come up on them and be safe all the way through this growing season. This one's delayed, just getting started now, so we'll have trucks and tractors and combines on the road quite likely all the way through the end of October into a good portion of November, maybe into December if things don't go all that well. Well, let's take a look at the harvest weather forecast on days out of the office. So I'll take you state by state. We'll start in Des Moines for Iowa, where today they have sunny skies and are headed to 72 degrees. Tomorrow, maybe a little light rainfall, just 0.09 of an inch, and that'll probably come late in the day. They'll have a high of 70 tomorrow, a low of 50, and then rainfall for Thursday. Nearly an inch of rain is forecast for Des Moines. A light rain on and off overnight, and then during the daytime hours. By the time they get to late afternoon, things should clear out, but rain coming back in. Friday, more rain is possible, just maybe 0.2 on Friday during the day in Des Moines, Iowa. Saturday sunshine and Sunday sunshine. Those are the days they start to worry about the low temperatures. Saturday overnight, 30 degrees the low, and Sunday the 28 degree low comes in, and then Monday down to 27. That's in Des Moines, Iowa. In Springfield, Illinois, the second largest corn producing state in the nation, Springfield dead center, 42 degrees, the overnight low last night, 76 with the high today, sunshine, partly cloudy tomorrow, they'll go to 72. Thursday, maybe a little light rain, but that'll come so late in the day, it won't matter, and we'll go to 74 degrees on Thursday. More rainfall during the day on Friday, maybe as much as 0.3. That's in Springfield, Illinois again, and we'll have a low overnight of about 37 degrees. Saturday sunshine, Sunday sunshine, and Monday sunshine. But the lows overnight, not so bad. Saturday, they will get to a 30 degree low. Sunday, 37. Monday, 35 degrees for the overnight. Lincoln, Nebraska, one of the coldest spots. They're clear today, 75. Tomorrow, clear, 74, or at least mostly clear. Some rainfall maybe on Thursday, but not so much, dropping to 38 degrees. And then Friday, more possible rain, but really that's where the lows start to come in, around 32 for their low. The high on that day, just 42 degrees. Saturday, clear skies, 28 for the low, 58 for the high. Sunday, 27 for the low, 60 for the high. And Monday, 28 for the low, and 64 for the high. So Saturday, Sunday, and Monday in Omaha, Nebraska, or rather Lincoln, Nebraska, really, really cold. That'll probably be the center of the coldest area. And we'll take a look at one more place, Fargo, North Dakota, where today the high is 71. Tomorrow, 69, both mostly sunny skies, and then Thursday, they'll get rain, 1.2 inches of rainfall. In fact, in Fargo on Thursday, as expected, they'll have a low of 33, a high that day of just 46 degrees. The following day on Saturday, the low is 31, the high 36. They'll start to get snow, and they think maybe 3 to 6 inches in Fargo on that day, though in that 31 to 36 degree range, it might be tough to keep that around. They could get another 2 to 5, though, on Saturday, so it'll probably start to pile up. It'll be wet, and that won't be good for the crop, a 31 degree low, 35 for the high on Saturday in Fargo. And then more flurries are possible on Sunday, though less than an inch of snow will fall. They will have a 38 degree high and a 32 degree low, 34 the low on Monday and Tuesday, 34 the low as well. That's a look at the weather forecast for some of the growing regions in the United States. On this Tuesday, we're joined by Stephen Platt from Archer Financial Services to talk about what's happened in the agriculture energy. He does that once a month with us. Hi, Stephen. How are you this afternoon?
Doing great.
Well, the last time we talked was prior to the drone attacks in Saudi Arabia that took out some production. I haven't actually heard for a while what that really means, although it didn't seem that the market cared all that much about it.
Well, it did. The initial day following the attacks, the market exploded up, reaching as high as 63.5, but the Saudis did move quickly to restore production a lot quicker than many people had expected, and the market has since put attention back toward the demand side more than anything else. Certainly, geopolitical risks do remain a key consideration for the complex, but given the Iranian sanctions, the Venezuelan sanctions, and now even Iraq is having some problems in terms of internal strife, along with even Ecuador, on top of the Saudi Arabian uncertainty. Surprisingly, the market did not respond in a fashion that one would have expected only 5 years ago. Instead, the market has focused on the demand side and the uncertainty it implies in terms of the underlying supply-demand situation. The trade dispute with China continues to really undermine the growth projections for demand for petroleum in the current year and probably next year. IEA, or the International Energy Agency, has steadily reduced its growth estimates for 2019 from 1.4 million barrels at the beginning of the year to 1.1 currently. For 2020, growth has also been revised downward, but not as much, from 1.4 to 1.3. Another factor is certainly in the background is the U.S. dollar, which has been affecting a lot of things and has controlled price inflation. This can also have a profound impact on emerging markets demand, which typically shows the highest growth rates in terms of the energy complex. The slowing in demand growth comes at a time when non-OPEC growth in production continues to expand, although maybe at a little bit slower rate than what it had been expected due to the weaker prices. That certainly reflects the growth in U.S. production. While some retrenchment in exploration and production has been apparent in rig counts, with them declining for the past 10 months, we have been able to maintain production at a relatively high level, although not at the record levels that we had attained this past summer. I think at this, up until another factor to look at, probably is U.S. oil inventories of crude. They've fallen and or had been falling here in the prior month or two. That was a supportive influence. But as we saw, I think many people have recognized that the need for large inventories is probably not as great as it once was, as supplies utilized are closer locationally in terms of U.S. supplies and a lot more secure. And that may have been one of the factors contributing to the lack of response to the Saudi Arabian news. This week, we will actually have an update on U.S. inventories tomorrow, but also the monthly updates from the IEA, International Energy Agency, and OPEC will also be apparent. In other markets, I guess ethanol certainly a little bit of a positive in terms of the stronger prices we've seen on ethanol. That has been a kind of two-edged sword. It reflects the lower production out of our ethanol plants as some plants actually close. Margins have improved there, though, in that they're the highest they've been since May of 2018. And the other good positive for farmers are going to be the nat gas prices and propane prices, particularly if they have to do a lot of drawing this coming harvest. I think those will be sharply lower than what they were last year.
Do you know much about the lines that transit Ukraine from Russia to Europe, Western Europe, and whether they feed crude oil or natural gas? And I'm just trying to put this into some context, of course, with Rick Perry and some of the things he's been doing with LNG.
Well, certainly the nat gas from Russia and crude from Russia do feed into Europe. They are very dependent on it, and there's been a lot of talk about the pipeline that they've been investing jointly, I think, with Germany in terms of nat gas. Certainly, the Europeans are becoming less reliant upon Russian sources, as our LNG exports actually increase and possibly are sourced out to those areas. So I think that is something to maybe consider, and certainly a big factor in terms of some of the negotiations and things that have been going on.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. He is in Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Check us out on demand online anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. You're busy in the field, I know. But if you get a chance, if you can't hook your Bluetooth phone up to the combine or the tractor cab radio, and then stream us anytime you'd like on demand, everything from the Opening Market Report to the Closing Market Report, or put up online at willag.org for you to listen to whenever you'd like. And oh, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I'm Todd Gleason from Illinois Extension.